What's up, everybody? This is MJ coming at you with another episode of The Social Introvert and the very first simulcast episode of The Social Introvert. So, very exciting night. Pretty sure I'm going to title these simulcast episodes as Late Night with The Social Introvert. I've been doing a couple other confessional type videos on my YouTube channel that kind of look like this. But the more I started doing this, I kind of like the vibe of these videos. It's like really intimate, and that's kind of what I want my show to be about. So, we just rolling with it, man. We rolling with it, and however it looks is however it looks right now, man. I'm just trying to make things happen, and we'll see how it goes. So, for those tuning into the podcast, listening via Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, or whatever platform that you use to listen to podcasts, thank you so much for tuning in. For those tuning in via YouTube and actually watching this video right now, big ups to you guys too. Like I said, this is my first time doing one of these type of simulcasts, and eventually this is what I had envisioned for my podcast, is to not only have the audio version but to also have the video version of it too. So hope you guys enjoy this episode, man. It's going to be a really cool episode. Wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about The Last Dance. We were just blessed with another fantastic documentary from the GOAT himself, Michael Jordan. And I just recently got an alert on my phone earlier today that The Last Dance was the most watched documentary by ESPN, which means everybody and their mom was watching it. Even people that probably didn't even know who he was, didn't get to see him play, or not even really like hardcore basketball fans were probably watching it. So it was really cool to get a chance to be able to see that documentary, and it brought back like so many memories, and it basically kind of like ignited a fire in me. I remember as a kid, I used to watch like tons and tons of like these other documentaries that he did that were more like home video type of documentaries, but I'll get into that later. So like I said, thank you guys for joining me today, and I hope you enjoy the show. So, let's see, I don't know how many weeks ago. There was two episodes aired every night. So, it was about 5 weeks ago when the series, or the docuseries, like, first aired on ESPN. And shout out to Netflix for claiming the international rights. So, anybody that watched The Last Dance overseas were pretty much watching it on Netflix. But anybody in the U.S. was watching it on ESPN, which I thought was pretty dope that Netflix kind of like jumped in on that. And Netflix is coming. I mean, this is a little sidetrack, but you know, all the big networks out there, just beware, mark my words, like Netflix is coming, man. They're gonna end up being one of the biggest media companies in the world, if you ask me. This is just a matter of time before they start gunning for companies like, you know, HBO and Showtime and, you know, those type of companies. I mean, you know, we all have Netflix. We all enjoy Netflix. So shout out to Netflix for doing that. But I wanted to start off by just kind of like recapping. Everyone, if you're tuning into this right now and you happen to watch the documentary, I don't want to bore you too much with stuff that you already watch. But there is like these little like segments that they had in between. I guess you could call them commercials. Like during the commercials, they had like these little segments where NBA players and entertainers and celebrities would like come on and kind of like share their stories about, you know, little like Chicago Bulls stories or like Michael Jordan stories and things like that. So just like, it made me want to share some of the things that how Michael Jordan impacted my life, how, you know, that Bulls team impacted my life. I think one of the things that they touched on a little bit, they didn't really go like super deep into it, but I think this is probably where I guess I got my first taste of Michael Jordan, was when he was doing the dunk contest. When he was doing the dunk contest, it was like always a constant battle between him and Dominique Wilkins. And there's even one year, like, tons of Dominique fans would say that he got robbed. I think that was the year that Jordan did the free throw line dunk. I vividly remember, like, those dunk contests, and I was just remembering, like, seeing Jordan and the creativity that he had, because back then, I don't even think they really like practiced, especially Jordan. I remember watching a lot of the documentaries that he did back in the day, and he was like, he never prepared for dunk contests. Like, he would just create midair. Like, he would just, you know, go in, and as he's going to the rim, like, he would just create dunks, like, while he was in the air. And that's what made it so special. Like, now that, I mean, don't get me wrong, like, now the dunks are just, like, insane. They're just, like, video game dunks. But that's, like, almost, like, where they get the concepts from. Like, they might see a dunk in a video game or something like that, and they just try and recreate it in real life. But back then, it was, like, you know, Jordan just had, like, so much creativity that that was just one of the things that, like, you never really knew what he was going to do until he did it. So it was like you always knew that each dunk was going to be either a slight variation of the one before, or it was going to be something completely new and out of this world. That's what I think is so good about Aaron Gordon and Zach LaVine, is that they bring, like, originality to the dunk contest. And you know, there's a lot of dunk contests where they're just, like, repetitive dunks over and over, and they're just constantly giving out 50s to people who don't deserve them, which is just bogus. But, I mean, yeah, man, those were some epic, like, dunk contests between Dominique and Jordan. So those are one of the first things that kind of, like, made me catch my attention of Jordan. And then I believe when I really started to pay attention, and when I was old enough to actually, like, really, like, start paying attention to basketball, was during the 92 Olympics. Before we jump into talking about the 92 Olympics, I just wanted to, like, briefly talk about, like, as the show started to progress, they started to, like, you know, go through the times. And there was a time in Jordan's career where it was, like, it almost, like, paved the way for how all NBA teams go through right now. Like, if you notice, there's like a path that, like, every team has to go through in order to get to the title. So it's, like, almost predictable when you know a team is on the verge of winning a title. And I believe the same thing happened to the Cavaliers. The same thing happened to Golden State. Like, they get to a point where And it seemed like it was about to happen to the Clippers before they decided to break up the team, which made it, like, completely surprising that they did. But it's almost like teams have to, like, struggle to get over the hump, and they always have that one team that they just can't get past. And then once they get past that team, they either end up losing in the finals, and then they come back and they win it the following year. And that just seems like that's the recipe for it. So it's like when they talked about the history of, you know, Chicago just being straight garbage, like, in the beginning when Jordan first got there, and then all of a sudden he just, like, completely turned that franchise around. And then, you know, now all of a sudden now they're in the Eastern Conference Finals going against Larry Bird and their big three, and, you know, just taking them down to the wire. They ended up losing, but it was like it was crazy to see this, how much, like, fire that this guy had to come in and just, you know, take on teams pretty much by himself, because it was really didn't have any help at that time. So, like, for him to put up 63 against Bird, Mikel, and Parrish, and a bunch of other Hall of Famers, Danny Ainge, like, that's pretty crazy, bro. Like, that is pretty crazy. And he was young, too, at that age. It wasn't like he was a wily vet. Like, he was still young, and he was just out there hooping, man. He was just out there hooping. And seeing that as a young kid and wanting to learn how to play basketball, I remember all those, like, classic battles with the Detroit Pistons and with the Knicks. Like, to me, like, that's when the NBA was at its best. Like, not for nothing, I mean, they were really out there playing. Like, it was pretty rough back then, man. Like, there was no easy baskets. And I played on some teams where it was like that. And it's definitely like not like that now. Not in high school, not in college, definitely not in the NBA. Like NBA is so far away from what it was back then that the whole concept of rivalries is just not, it's just not there, man. I remember when the NBA used to come on NBC on Saturdays, and I used to look forward to those like classic like Knicks Bulls rivalries because you knew that the Knicks hated the Bulls, like they hated them. So it was like no matter what, you knew you were gonna see some type of like rough battle. It didn't matter what the score was, you knew it was gonna be like some crazy battle. And it kind of, it's kind of sad now when you look back, knowing that like Patrick Ewing, you know, never really got a chance to like win a championship because he always had Michael Jordan in the way. And I believe it was that one year they finally did get to the finals and they blew it. But still, I mean, that pretty much sucked for a lot of other teams in the league too. I mean, it happened to, you know, Charles Barkley. You know, he prevented a lot of guys from getting titles. And, you know, that's just as unfortunate that there is when you look at the league right now. There's a lot of guys in the league right now that have championship rings that you probably never even heard of before. But you think about some of the greats that don't have rings, it just, you know, it almost makes you wonder how much does having a championship ring solidify your legacy as an NBA great? I mean, when you think about some of the greats that don't have championships, it's like, does having one or two championships like propel you past like some of the greats that don't have it? I don't think so. So it's like almost makes you wonder, like, unless you're in that category where you're talking about like Kobe and Jordan, like having 5, 6, Shaq, like those guys that have multiple championships. Once you get into like that upper echelon, then maybe, you know, the rings matter. But when you're talking about onesies and twosies, I really don't know like how much it matters when you're comparing, you know, role players to, you know, other Hall of Fame type players. So seeing those rivalry games and seeing those Knick games on Saturdays against the Bulls, like I remember like running outside during halftime and trying to like mimic some of the moves, and, you know, to kind of like use that to kind of segue into what I was talking about. Like I remember when they first announced that the Dream Team was going to be professional basketball players. And at that time, I was even more stoked because Christian Laettner made that team, and he was the only college player at that time to make that team. Before that, they were using college players, but the one year that they decided to use all pros, they still had Christian Laettner be on that team. And I think that was the year that Christian Laettner won Player of the Year. And you really don't even see him in any of the footage. Like, he really didn't even get to play because, like, that was the greatest team ever assembled. I mean, like, that team was just, like, off the chain. There was no way Christian Laettner was going to get burned on that team. He was pretty much there for an insurance policy, which, when you think about it, you see these guys that end up playing on these teams. Like, Anthony Davis is a prime example. Like, Anthony Davis ended up playing on the Olympic team when I don't think he necessarily was supposed to. He was coming into the NBA and he was a rookie, and he learned so much from being around guys like Kobe and LeBron and Durant and Carmelo, and now he's like one of the top players in the league. So it's like being around that type of talent and being around those individuals that have high basketball IQs, like, it only can help but wear off. Especially if they're sharing with you, you know, inside tips on how to, like, work on your game and, like, things that you can do to get better and take your game to the next level. So, it's kind of surprising that that didn't happen to Christian Laettner, but that 92 team was, like, a whole different beast. But I remember recording a lot of the Dream Team games, and I would, like, watch them over and over and over again, and I would, like, constantly watch Jordan and Scottie Pippen. Specifically because at that time I was a Bulls fan, and I would like to watch them like over and over and over again. And I could just remember as a kid, there was this one play that Jordan did, and I would, you know, really love to have that pop up right here, right now. I don't know if I can make it work. If it pops up, great. Then that means I figured out a way to get it to pop up. But hopefully that play is playing right now. If not, that means I didn't make it happen. But anyway, there was one specific play in the 92 Olympics where Jordan got a steal. I rewinded that play so many times because it actually started on the defensive end. And it just made me want to like play the game of basketball. And I remember I would always like go outside and just try and like mimic the moves that Jordan played. And to be honest, mimicking Jordan is how I taught myself how to play basketball. Like when I was a little kid, I didn't go to any summer camps. I didn't, you know, have, you know, people teaching me how to play the game. I pretty much taught myself by watching the guys on TV and trying to mimic them. And I got really good at imitating them to the point where it actually made me a good player. So it was like pretty weird how I actually like learned how to play the game. And then once you actually get into high school and you start playing organized sports, you kind of can fine tune those skills and you can like work on your game a little bit more. But ever since the 92 team, man, I was all in on playing basketball. And then I remember Jordan used to have like all these like old school like home video like documentaries. Two of my favorites was Michael Jordan Playground and Airtime, and then Michael Jordan to the Max. Michael Jordan to the Max was like more current, but Playground, I used to wear that tape out. I used to watch that video all the time. It was like one of those videos that you would watch to like get hyped up for a game. So anytime I had a AAU game or anytime I was going to the park to like play ball with my boys, like I would watch that video before I would go to the park to get like hyped up and to get like excited to like play, because it was just like one of those like uplifting, like motivational like videos. But it was Michael Jordan, you know, it only made you like want to go to the park and try and imitate some of those same moves. So it was like I pretty much grew up on Michael Jordan Playground and Airtime, man. I used to wear those tapes into the ground, man. I can't even imagine how many times I used to watch those videos, man. I used to watch those videos a lot. I really liked how they put the spotlight on certain role players. Like, they, you know, they obviously gave Scotty his shine because, you know, Scotty was like a huge, you know, he was Robin to Michael's Batman, you know. It was him, like that was his ace. But like I really admired how they put the spotlight on certain role players. Like they gave Tony Kukoc a lot of like time and talking and things like that, and gave a little bit about his story. They gave Rodman a lot of like time and they talked about his role and things like that. And then when they did the whole bit on Steve Kerr and how he kind of like learned from John Paxson how to like, you know, be a teammate of Michael's and things like that. Like, that's like real basketball, yo. Like, that's real inside talk about like guys that don't always get to touch the ball, guys that just have to stay. And let me tell you firsthand, like I played basketball in high school and college, and I've played Division I ball, I played Division II ball, and I played Division III ball, and I've been in plenty of circumstances where I had the opportunity to have the ball in my hand, and there was a lot of times where I didn't. So being able to have to be one of those guys to either come off the bench and just be ready at the drop of a dime, that takes a lot of skill and it takes a lot of talent to be able to be in the game mentally when you're sitting on the bench for a long period of time, and then all of a sudden, like, in any given scenario in the game, you need to just go in and knock down a jump shot or knock down a three or knock down, like, you know, crucial free throws and things like that. Like, there's a lot of pressure for those type of players that don't necessarily get the headlines, or they don't get the big deals, or they don't get the big endorsements. But those are the guys that, like, make the teams tick. Those are the guys, those are the glue guys, you know what I'm saying? And I thought it was like a really cool bid that they, you know, gave Steve Kerr like that opportunity to shine. Like, not only did they give him the opportunity to shine in a documentary, but during the course of his career with the Bulls, like, obviously he gained that trust from obviously going to battle with Michael in practice, which is where it all starts. I mean, that kind of stuff happens in practice all the time. All the time, especially back in the days. Now, I don't know. I can't really say about that. I would probably say not. But, like, trust and believe, again, like I said, I've been on teams where there was just straight up brawls in practice. And nobody, and it was just like we all pieced it up. You know what I mean? It made us tougher. It made us, you know, gel together as a team. It made us come together as a team. And it just made us stronger when it came time to go to battle, knowing that, you know, your brother next to you or your teammate next to you is going to have your back, like, no matter what. So I really, really could relate to that aspect of when they kind of, like, went in on all the role players. We all know how good Dennis Rodman was. I mean, to me, I wouldn't even consider Dennis Rodman a role player. He was more of, like, part of the big three. And speaking about big threes, there's always, like, the constant debate about, like, super teams and things like that, especially now, because a lot of the players now are taking control over where they go, which is what they should be doing. Like, the players should have control over, like, what teams they play for, how long they play for. They're just having more control over their destinies and things like that. But when you look back on that, you look back at some of those teams, like I said earlier, like you had Bird, like the Celtics had a big three. They had Bird, they had Parrish, and they had McHale. Like, you know, at one point in time, the Houston Rockets had a big three. They had Charles Barkley, Hakeem Olajuwon, and Clyde Drexler. The Showtime Lakers, I mean, they had Magic. They had Worthy, they had Kareem, like they had a bunch of, like there was some other big threes out there. And even when Barkley was in Phoenix, they had Kevin Johnson, they had Dan Marley, and they had Charles Barkley. Like they had a lot of big threes back in the day. But yeah, like it was just one of those things where that like slightly gets overlooked. But I guess it's because like those things kind of happen organically as opposed to now where it's just like the players have more control of, like, where they go and who they get to play with. There's two other, like, really cool aspects of the documentary that one of them I didn't really know about. And another one I knew a little bit about, but it was cool to get more of, like, an inside look. Number one, I didn't know, like, I don't know how, I mean, I followed sports, but a lot of times you don't get to know the management side of teams, especially when you're just a casual fan. If you're a diehard fan, then you know you're reading the papers and you're finding out info. And this was, you know, before having access to anything online like really like took over, right? Like this was, you know, this was a long time ago where things was just basically in a newspaper. And, like, maybe you can find some stuff online, but everything was either word of mouth or you had to watch, like, ESPN or something like that. And, like, the relationship that the players had with the Bulls ownership, that just seems, like, blasphemous. Like, now, like, it seems like it just makes you wonder, like, you know, the whole ownership player thing. And we went through this whole thing with the NFL that was like, you know, it kind of opened a lot of people's eyes with like how these owners basically, I guess, quote unquote, feel like they own these players when they're the ones out there doing the work and they're the ones out there in the trenches making them rich by winning championships and by filling the seats and things like that. So it's like, you know, they have to get credit to an extent, but it's like, you know, when it comes to the whole thing about, you know, it's a business and, you know, you got to do things, you know, to protect your business, it just almost makes sense. Like, you know, there has to be a fine line between just having straight up loyalty and, you know, just being like a good, you know, manager or a good owner or a good owner or a good GM and things like that. But like some of the stories that they were telling, you know, with the whole thing with Scottie's contract and then, you know, how they made the 98 season like the last season that Phil Jackson was going to be there regardless of whether or not if they won or lost. Like that's how it became, you know, the whole title of it being the last dance. Like, that whole concept is just bogus. Like, that was something during a time that I didn't know about until now, obviously. And I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one that didn't know that. Maybe there's some people that knew that, but I didn't know that that was like a negotiated thing where it was like, okay, this was going to be the last year. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. And the funny thing about it is that when they got to the end of the documentary, they tried to say that they offered Phil the chance to come back for one more year. And it's just like, really? Like, I'm pretty sure they said that just for, just to say that they said it. I mean, they are obviously made it clear that he wasn't coming back. And so that automatically mean that they were gonna tear that squad apart, which, no fans of any teams wants to see their favorite team go through a rebuild. And that's what kind of happened to me. That's why I stopped being a Bulls fan. Like, once they I've always been a fan of teams. Like, when you're a fan of a team, you're a fan of that team, not that organization. So if you have like a good core of guys and you like how they play together, that means you're a fan of that team. Once that team starts to break up, then they have some of us that say, it's bandwagon and things like that, but it's like I normally ride with teams until they start breaking up the nucleus of the team. There's only really like two teams that I'm ride or die with. That's the Giants and that's the Duke Blue Devils. Like, Duke Blue Devils, that's college. So you automatically know, especially now, it's year to year. Like, they're bringing in guys for 1 year, a bunch of one and done. So it's like, we have a good year and we go on a championship run. I'm not the expectations for the next season are extremely low because you have no idea who's coming into that team. They always get 5-star recruits, but you never really know how those guys are gonna gel with some of the guys that are left over. Same thing with football. Like, football, they'll build up like these dynasties, and then before you know it, they just start like picking people apart. They lose like one major star, and then the next thing you know, you're the Cleveland Browns. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like it's just disgusting that like the whole like dynasties are really like a dime a dozen. Like, it happened to the Warriors. I mean, they're still a little bit intact, but like, it happened to the Warriors, it just happened to the Patriots. Like, it happened to everybody. It happened to the good Dallas Cowboy teams like back in the day. It happened to the Buffalo Bills teams back in the day. It's about to start happening to the Rams. Like, they already have some pieces. The thing about the Rams is that they kind of like get rid of people, but then they bring like good talent in. So don't really want to get into football, but you get where I'm going with this. Like, the whole like dynasty thing was just kind of like mind-boggling to me. And now we get to the end of the documentary and find out that Jordan really wanted to try and go for seven. I mean, we don't know how much validity it is to that, but obviously they were unstoppable, man. Like, they were 6-0 in the finals. I mean, now I don't think there's any other team that could say that they were 6-0 in the finals, and it was up to them to continue to keep that train going until they lost and they didn't get that opportunity. So that was kind of not necessarily sad, but now you're just always going to wonder, like, what if, like, what would have happened? And I know myself and a lot of players probably don't like wondering what if, especially if you felt like you had the tools to do something great. All right, well, I think that's going to be it for this episode. I really had fun doing this type of simulcast episode for the podcast. If you guys are watching via YouTube, please let me know what you guys think in the comments below. If there's anything you liked, if there's anything you think I should change, your feedback will definitely help me progress this podcast, go this simulcast the way that I want to. But definitely be on the lookout for more like confessional type videos from me that are kind of like in this format. But I'll have them, organized on the channel pretty good so you guys will know which one's which. But for those of you listening via the podcast, again, thank you guys for tuning in. But before I get out of here, I just want to give a big shout out to Anchor and Spotify for giving me the opportunity to be able to not only have this podcast, but to also be able to get it distributed across multiple platforms. And now that I'm doing this on YouTube, hopefully that I can build another following via YouTube too. I love YouTube. I love, you know, the ability to be able to create and, like, you know, share a little bit of who I am with you guys. And that's pretty much what I did in this video. I have no idea what the final cut of this video is gonna look like, but hopefully I could, like, jazz it up a little bit to make it a little bit more interesting, you know, to those that actually want to watch it. But if the video is not your thing and then you want to check out the podcast is available on all major platforms. It's available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Cast, CastBox, and a bunch of other ones. Or you could hit me up on social media. The Social Introvert is on Instagram at The Social Intro and on Twitter at The Social Intro _. So you could hit me up there. I always will update whenever I'm dropping a new episode, so you'll get a notification there. And I think that's going to be a wrap for this one. So until next time, guys, peace.